From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 21st day of September 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Merrill Crowley. He's at Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility, that's their ethanol plant outside of Logansport, Indiana, will join us to take a look at the cash grain market in their area. I'll update you on the weather forecast, and we'll take a peek into the agricultural news for the day. Yesterday, folks were meeting in Washington, D.C. about consolidation in the seed and agrochemical industries, and it wasn't pretty. We'll hear all of that during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Wednesday afternoon in Chicago, futures finished lower. The nearby December corn down a half at $3.40. The March at $3.50, three quarters lower. May at $3.57, down a penny. July at $3.63 and three quarters, a half lower. September down three quarters of a cent at $3.70. Next year's December at $3.79 and a half, three quarters lower. November soybeans down 14 and a quarter at $9.75 and a half. The January 981 down 13 and three quarters. March down 13 and a quarter, 984 and three quarters. May beans 990 and a quarter, 12 and a half lower. July down 11 and three quarters at 995. And November beans of next year at 964 and a half, 8.5 cents lower. Bean oil futures 43 cents lower at 33.40 in the October. Bean meal down $4.40 at $308.70. December soft red winter wheat, a penny and three quarters higher, $4.07 and three quarters of a cent, the settlement price. July, the harvest month for the soft red at 451 and a quarter, up a penny and three quarters. The July hard red at 458 and a half, 3.5 cents higher. Live cattle futures in the October at $108.50, 82 and a half higher. September in the feeders at 136.50, up $1.17 and a half in the October at $1.22 and a half higher, 132.35 for the feeder cattle. Lean hogs in the October at $54.42 and a half. $1.12 and a half lower in December at $48.37 and a half, 70 cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. It's National Farm Safety and Health Week. Be sure to take care of yourself as you move through this harvest season and watch for those tractors and combines on the road. We're now joined by Merrill Crowley at Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, to discuss what's been happening in Chicago on this Wednesday. Merrill, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell me just a bit about why soybeans managed to break today. Was it just too much pressure to the upside and ready to turn the other way around?
Well, I think in general terms, we're starting to get some harvest going again in some of the Midwest areas. It's still wet in the Northeast, and they'll probably get rains to what, about mid next week, and then they're supposed to dry up. So, you know, the whole thing kind of is, USDA said we had 9% complete versus 12% in the five-year average for corn harvest. On the soybean harvest, they're saying 4% complete versus 6% last year and 5% in the five-year average. And that's not much difference, but the thing is, we've got exports up to where they're 16% above the five-year average for soybeans. And so with that and the lack of soybeans coming out of the field as originally planned for by these end users, they're having to bid up to try to get beans moving, to get them down to the Gulf and to get them put into the processing plant. So that had started this whole thing, and with the weather opening up to get more harvest going, it's put the pressure back on the bean market.
So this tells me that the bean market, at least in the front months, should be higher. They have been for this past several days, and things began to fall back just a bit today. However, the back months have followed along, and that has confused me some. Do we have any good reason for the two of them to travel together at this time?
Well, if you are looking at some of the demand that we're seeing, and you look at, say, last year, we started at this time of year a 450 million carryout, and this year we're starting at 365. Last year we took that 450 clear down to 195. If we keep having the demand, then and it looks like right now we can, depending on the South American crop, you've got to start bidding up for the next year's crop in order to gather more acres to provide for the demand needed. So I think that's part of the reason for the back months coming up. And I failed to mention that the other reason for the beans going up was the oil went up severely the last couple of days, and I think you discussed that with Wayne yesterday.
Yeah, in fact, we have talked about that a bit, and one of the other things we've talked with Wayne and the other analysts and you today, too, is that when you look further into the market, I'm wondering whether it is concerned and maybe at this point trying to buy acreage in South America, especially in Argentina, given the shift that farmers might make based on their tax implications of the acreage that they plant.
And I think you bring up a very good point, you know, especially the South America. And you're also seeing some fairly dry weather in the Argentine area. That's a little more La Nina-like to have it in that area. The Mato Grosso area of Brazil was dry. It's starting to get some rain. But, yeah, I think we, in general, need to encourage more beans in that area because with their short corn crop in Brazil, people are seeing in that local area bids to encourage them to plant more corn. And then in South America, like you made mention, you have the export tax that wasn't cut, so they'll probably look to plant more corn in those areas.
What are you hearing about corn harvest in the United States and how it's progressing?
Slow but sure. You know, with a low price, nobody wants to go out there and get it with the moisture. We have... you know, you don't have enough, I don't think, harvested to make a general assumption. Early issues are showing that we do have disease out there. There's been some big talk about diplodia, and that could become a big concern, but in the different places I talked to different people, it seems to be variety specific, and if the people have the one that's the variety that's more susceptible, yeah, you see those people getting high rates and getting some dock. But it does seem to be spotty, so it does seem to be variety specific. I think more of the concern right now is the light test weights that we're seeing. In general, what we're seeing early is less than expected. There's still great yields, no doubt about it. And I don't see a lot of corn yields being above 2014 at this time. Today was the first time I read something where they thought that the Iowa-Minnesota corn yields were running above average. The problem with above average, I don't know what average is in the areas they're discussing.
All right. So what are producers mostly asking or what are you telling them about marketing both corn and soybeans, especially if they have to use commercial storage?
Well, it's kind of a toss-up, really, on the commercial storage for corn. You do have enough carry. It depends on where your basis is at and your normal basis patterns. You might be able to recoup your storage costs from basis improvement and carry. The problem with that is you have no downside protection. And granted, right now, you don't need a lot of downside protection when you're looking at a situation where we should be in the lower part of the marketing range. The other thing is if you don't want to go through and take that risk, then you can sell it and look to either buy back futures or buy back options. Again, the carry kind of hinders you there, but you get about 90% of your money to utilize and still can control a long position on the board.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with me today. I appreciate you being here, and we look forward to talking with you again soon, Merrill.
All right, thanks for having me, Tom.
Merrill Crowley, of course, is with Crowley Commodities. He's out of Watseka, Illinois. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. If you have the opportunity, we're in the midst of a really quiet fund drive at this point, and there's a special thing that's happening. A few of our folks have gotten together, we call them friends, and donated an extra gift to encourage you to donate as well. And right now, if you donate a dollar, they'll donate a dollar, meaning your gift is doubled no matter what. Now, this is kind of a quiet drive, so we won't spend a lot of time with it, but if you have the opportunity, dial this number, 217-244-0025. That's 217-244-0025. or go to willpledge.org. You can go to willag.org and find the donor button, but willpledge.org and fill it out. When you do that, your money will be doubled because the Friends of WILL will make that happen, and we'll all be very happy. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time to pledge your financial support and be safe in the field. And thanks again for making sure that that gift comes to us. Oh, and mark it as in support of agriculture, please. In today's agricultural news, more competition versus less. That was the debate yesterday at the Senate Judiciary Committee as officials of emerging agrochemical giants and farm leaders argued over the benefits and cost of a rapidly consolidating seed and chemical industry. There were no cut-and-dried answers, and there may not be until federal regulators decide if and how best to allow mergers of Dow and DuPont, Bayer Ag and Monsanto, and ChemChina and Syngenta. Divestiture of some traits, for example, might be the cost of approval, but there were plenty of opinions on creating three mega companies controlling 80% of the U.S. corn seed market and 70% of global pesticides. DuPont's Ag Executive Vice President James Collins had this to say.
So bringing together the innovation engines of DuPont and Dow into one company fully focused on agriculture allows us to expand the choices and the competitive price values that farmers demand in a way that we could not do independently.
But American Farm Bureau Federation's senior economist Bob Young expressed caution over consolidating six giant agricultural suppliers into three as farm revenues continue to crash.
I think the challenge that we face as an industry is having all of these occur at exactly the same time. AFBF is suggesting that as we go through a review of these mergers, that we look at these not as individual company mergers, but that we look at what the impact is going to be on the sector as a whole.
And the American Antitrust Institute's Diana Moss warned the new mergers could fundamentally restructure the markets for traits, seeds, and chemicals, possibly harming farmers, consumers, and innovators.
The USDA has found that the prices of crop seed have risen faster than the prices that farmers receive for their crops. Seed price increases have outpaced yield increases over time, and the USDA has concluded that higher levels of concentration are no longer associated with higher R&D.
Senators were also skeptical, including Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin.
Farmers, even though they're larger now than they used to be, farms are larger than they used to be, are really kind of at the mercy of the market. If there isn't real competition, they are the first ones to suffer, as far as I can see it.
For his part, American Farm Bureau Federation's Bob Young reasoned everyone's knee-jerk reaction is to think increased concentration will mean higher input prices, concluding knees tend to jerk reflexively, but sometimes with reason. On that news note, let's move to the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which many might view as globalization. In a move meant to show the broad support for the TPP across multiple industries, the heads of the American Farm Bureau Federation, Information Technology Industry Council, Coalition of Service Industries, and the National Association of Manufacturers will send a letter to congressional leaders today urging them to work together expeditiously to pass the deal no later than the end of this year. The letter, addressed to President Obama, as well as Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Minority Leader Harry Reid, House Speaker Paul Ryan, and Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, outlines various ways the trade deal would benefit each industry and argues that access to new markets is necessary for their industries to continue to grow. Failure to act on the TPP will only keep the United States at a competitive disadvantage globally, to the detriment of America's farms, manufacturing, service, and technology sectors, and the American workers that depend on jobs in each of these sectors, the group writes. President Obama has been putting a new spin on the TPP, and he's taken a fresh look at that in a speech at the UN at the General Assembly yesterday, when he cast the deal as a way for nations to rewrite the current path towards globalization. In order to move forward, we do have to acknowledge that the existing path to global integration requires a course correction, Obama said, adding that those who champion globalization too often ignore inequality within nations. He says we cannot unwind integration any more than we can stuff technology back into the box, nor can we look to failed models of the past. If we start resorting to trade wars, market-distorting subsidies, beggar their neighbor policies, and over-reliance on natural resources instead of innovation, these approaches will make us poor collectively, and they are more likely to lead to conflict, according to the president. He argues that in the alternative, it is best to pursue policies that focus on fueling growth and innovation and narrowing the income gap. With that agenda in mind, he said, we've worked to reach trade agreements that raise labor standards and raise environmental standards, and we've done this with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, so the benefits are more broadly shared. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, during the growing season, periodically I will tell you to stop your machine, shut it off, and take a nap. This is one of those times right now, in the midst of harvest. Every day, turn it off in the 2 o'clock hour, take a nap. You'll probably hear what I have to say, but if you don't, you can always come back and get it online at willag.org. It's willag.org. By the way, this is National Farm Safety and Health Week, and the International Society for Agricultural Safety and Health devotes Wednesday of this week to keeping children on farms, ranches, and in rural areas safe and healthy. And they say, let's leave our children with a legacy to be proud of. Sadly, the statistics worldwide are pretty devastating. Every 3 days, a child dies. Every day, 33 children are injured due to agricultural-related incidents. Here are three tips that can help protect the future generation of farmers. First, the use of personal protective equipment can help prevent health issues in adulthood. These are pretty important and easy. Skin cancer is often linked to severe sunburns and sun exposure during childhood. Make sure you provide your child with sunscreen and a wide-brim hat when they're in the sun. Encourage use of hearing protection to help prevent hearing loss due to exposure of loud noises often found on the farm. Children visiting the farm need protection too. Don't let them out of it. Non-farm families visiting the farmstead may not understand safe practices regarding animals, chemicals, and equipment. Establish and enforce rules for all visitors to ensure safety and avoid farm-related incidents. Supervision is important for all children, but especially for those unfamiliar with farming. Make the play area more fun than the farmstead if you can. Safety first means safety always for everyone. Teach children what to do in the event of a fire, severe weather, other emergency situations. Instruct them on dialing 911 and knowing the physical address of the farm. Role model safe behavior and do not allow extra riders on tractors and all-terrain vehicles. Never allow children to play in grain bins. Teach kids how to properly use farm equipment before assigning them any farm task. And, of course, supervise them especially close when they're brand new to that task. It's National Farm Safety and Health Week, and the folks at the International Society for Agricultural Safety and Health always dedicate the Wednesday of this week to farm kids. On this Wednesday afternoon, let's check in with the folks over at the Anderson's Climbers facility. That's their ethanol plant outside of Logansport, Indiana. Stephen Linneber now joins us. Good afternoon to you, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Are you busy there today?
You betcha. You betcha. Wheels are turning. Harvest is fully underway in our neck of the woods, in our opinion.
And since you're at the ethanol plant, I'm going to assume mostly corn is going.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, and actually relatively dry for the 21st of September, coming directly from the field.
Tell me about the specs on the corn coming in.
Very good. I mean, as at this point in time, really, 20-21% out of the field, test weight well above probably a majority of our expectations at that particular moisture level. Really, the only thing we're seeing here is just a little bit of cob rot damage as that corn has continued to see a little too much moisture from time to time. So damage is probably the biggest topic of conversation, but for the most part, not enough to make us talk too long about it.
And yields?
As of right now, the speculation of 220 plus is definitely start to turn into factual data at this point.
And for an average, would that be above normal for the area?
Probably right on spot with average, at least for the local draw territory where this cordon's coming from. I mean, the last couple years for this draw has been a scotch better than that. But at the same time, I think you've got some areas that didn't do near as good the last 2 years that are bumped that quite a bit. So I would call it above average as a whole.
And how has local basis reacted to the influx of corn?
Going to fade in a hurry, providing that the movement stays constant. I mean, as of right now, it started strong, but as we get to the afternoon hours, things start to switch to beans, as bean basis still remains stronger than the full fall bid. So we've got a little bit of, basis hold for the time being until it's, 7 to 6 every day straight corn, where we've got a little bit of downtime in the afternoons yet.
And what are your bids on the spot months in that case?
Pretty much looking at 320, and that's been flat for the entire week thus far, and that's both locations, Climbers and Delphi.
And for soybeans?
Going away at 960, but that's a quick ship bid. We'd be closer to 945 after today.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it, Stephen.
Thanks, Todd.
Stephen Linnerburr is with the Andersons. He joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.